This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Vital Farms. Isn't it bullshit to have to question where your food comes from? At Vital Farms, you can trace your pasture-raised eggs all the way back to the source, the pasture. On the side of each pasture-raised carton of eggs, you'll find the name of the farm where your eggs were laid. And when you look the farm up on their website, you'll get a peek at all the sunshine, fresh air, and open space the hens enjoy. Learn more and find out where to buy them at vitalfarms.com. Vital Farms, keeping it bullshit-free.
It's Monday here on the North Shore Drive podcast of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We've got Ray Fittipaldi. We're going to talk about the updates in the offensive coordinator search, as well as an early look at the Senior Bowl and who the Steelers are looking at in the NFL draft. Ray's headed to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. We'll get a look with him before he goes there. And we'll talk about what happened in the playoffs and all the crazy things that went down and how the Chiefs will be playing the Niners for the Super Bowl. All that here and more on the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive Podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. As always, you can find this show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this YouTube channel to get all of your daily content from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, as well as the Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast. As always, the show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. Go to Mike's Beer Bar today to try one of their 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. You got to try Mike's Beer Bar out today, the best bar in Pittsburgh. As I said before, we're joined by Ray Fittipaldi, who's coming to us here. We'll get to his upcoming trip to Mobile, Alabama in a bit. But Ray, we got to talk about the updates in the offensive coordinator search, because that is kind of like the number one objective for the Steelers to accomplish right now, is to find the new mind that will lead the offensive side of the ball. And we know that they've interviewed Arthur Smith, former head coach of the Falcons, but Zach Robinson, who was the first person that we heard that they were interviewing or that they wanted to interview, has taken a job to be with the Falcons with Raheem Morris following another Sean McVayite to a new job there. What's your insight on one, Arthur Smith, and where the Steelers' offensive coordinator search stands?
So really a contrasting candidate compared to the first three targets, Chris. You just mentioned Zach Robinson, of course, going with the Falcons now. And Raheem Morris, he only had quarterback position coaching experience. Jerod Johnson, another candidate, only quarterback's coaching experience, and even a short resume. I mean, it's only a couple years long. And then, of course, Thomas Brown, 1 year as an OC, and then, really just no play calling experience beyond that. So when you look at Arthur Smith, I think, you know, if you're looking for OC experience, play calling experience, which Mike Tomlin said he preferred, you would assume that maybe Arthur Smith is, you know, one of their top targets. I'm not going to say he's their top target, but you would have to think that that would put him maybe in one of the front runner positions for this job. So I like it. You know, a lot of people are down on Arthur Smith after going 7-10 for all 3 years of his tenure with the Falcons. But Chris, if you look at what he did in 2019 and 2020,
yes,
especially 2019, that run to the AFC Championship game, had a big lead on the Chiefs early in that game before it kind of fell apart on them. And even 2020, I know they didn't have success in the playoffs. They had a home playoff loss to the Ravens. But, Chris, I think they were number three in scoring, number four or five in total offense.
So they were a top 10 offense in Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
The 2 years that he was their offensive coordinator. He had that's a good track record. That's what got him hired. It didn't work out as a head coach. We talked about this with Kingsbury, you know, same thing. Like, well, Kingsbury was an NFL OC before he was anything. But maybe there are guys like Arthur Smith who, you know what, they might be a really good offensive coordinator, but just can't do the head coaching gig.
Yeah, I mean, and that's okay. I mean, as long as he can run an NFL offense and get the most out of Kenny Pickett and the skill position players that are here, that's all the job entails. So we'll see what happens in the process here. As far as the candidates who have surfaced, Robinson, Johnson, Smith, and Brown, I think Smith and Brown are probably two of my early favorites, but I think Smith, given his experience, is probably number one at this point.
No, I agree. I mean, Smith with his experience, Mike Tomlin said that was a priority, right? And, you know, and figuring that out moving forward. And I talked about this on Channel 11 last night on The Final Word, but if you look at how these coordinators are, you look at Johnson, you look at Robinson, you look at Kingsbury, you know, even though Robinson is out the picture, those guys are more like quarterback guys. Like they're either quarterback whisperers, they're quarterback coaches, and they're looking to take the step up to become an offensive coordinator. Both Thomas Brown and Arthur Smith have been offensive coordinators before, and they're not quarterback whisperers. They're, you know, Brown is a running backs coach turned coordinator. Smith is a tight ends coach turned coordinator. And it makes me wonder if the Steelers are kind of just weighing both sides of the equation. Like, do we want a guy who's going to be specifically just really good at developing a quarterback and hope that he either gets his hands on Kenny and makes Kenny Pickett better, or if he gets whatever quarterback that they bring in better, or do they want a guy who's just makes a system really strong? Because, you know, Arthur Smith, his success with the Titans as an offensive coordinator wasn't about making Ryan Tannehill look amazing. It was they had Derrick Henry, they had some decent weapons, and he was able to make that offense look really balanced, which to me, that's what the Steelers need right now, is an offense that can run through a good running game with Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. They have good playmakers in Freiermuth, with Johnson and Pickens. And if Kenny Pickett can just play at a slightly above average level, it makes this, I think that will make this offense really good. They also need to get stronger in the offensive line of them.
Yeah. Arthur Smith is a former college offensive lineman at North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Also coached the offensive line under Mike Munchak. So, you know, he knows how to draw up a running game, and you know his philosophies would align with Andy Weidel and Omar Khan in terms of what he wants, up front. Under Mike Vrabel, they were a tough, physical, strong football team that loved to play that way. So I think philosophically it would be a good fit. But to your point, I think the quarterback's coach aspect of this is important, Chris. And I'm not saying the OC has to have that kind of a background, but you definitely want a quarterback's coach in here who knows how to get the best out of Kenny Pickett. So, you know, I don't know, would Johnson come here for an upgrade in position if he's a passing game coordinator, to Arthur Smith? And, you know, could they lure him that way? Could they get somebody else to come in and do that? So, you know, I think that's what's to be determined here. Again, I still think they're fairly early on in this process. They could make a hire at any time. They are Rooney Rule compliant, having interviewed Johnson and Brown. So they theoretically could make a hire at any time. But if you look at what Mike Tomlin said at the beginning of this process, Chris, he wanted to be thorough and he wanted to be a learning process. So after only interviewing three guys, I don't think he would go back on that. I still think there's probably more to come.
I agree with that. Clint Kubiak is a name that everyone's waiting to see where he goes. You know, he's a guy who he was an offensive coordinator for a year with the Broncos, then became, you know, the pass game coordinator or specialist or whatever he's called for the Niners. And now everyone wants a piece of him because they want to get some of the magic that he brought with Brock Purdy. And that's another guy who made a system really good for a game manager type quarterback. He's now officially interviewed with the Saints. And I think there's a lot of people wondering, why haven't the Steelers brought him in? Ray, you've covered, you know, offensive coordinator searches before. What is the complexity between one? Do you think the Steelers do at least kick the, you know, just give this a shot in talking to a guy like that? And two, you know, what would be the thing that might be holding them back from doing this?
Well, I mean, it's just when you're involved in playing in a Super Bowl, Chris, it's just really hard. As you know, this week coming up is the big game planning week. This is when everything, all the work is done for the coaches, all the X's and O's, drawing up the schemes to try to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. They'll tinker with that once they get to Vegas, but all of that work is being done this week. So, you know, could he interview at night with the Steelers? Yeah, but you would think maybe, you know, when he's a little bit less busy that, you know, they could find some time to have a thorough interview. So that one might have to wait. Obviously, he did one last week with the Saints when they were playing for a conference championship game. You know, but, you know, I would think he would want to be focused on the Super Bowl this week. If he does one with the Steelers or any other team, I think it'd probably be something in the form of a Zoom. You know, I don't think he would come to Pittsburgh, obviously, this week or next. So maybe they could do something preliminarily on a Zoom or a phone call. But, you know, if they want to do a more thorough one, it may have to wait.
That's where I feel like that the two is like it's just a tough position with what they would want there. But I think that they've been casting a wide net. They've been trying to bring other people in. I also think it's possible that some of these guys that they're talking to, you know, whereas, like you said, they want a more experienced offensive coordinator as the guy leading the room, but maybe they're also looking for like what happened, you know, what if we can get a guy in the future and we know who we want because we've talked to them before, or maybe right. One of these guys can end up being one of the guys under this offensive coordinator who they do hire. So I think a lot of this is just turning over stones, doing their due diligence, doing their research to see who they can bring in. We'll keep you updated with the offensive coordinator search here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Read all the work at post-gazette.com. But we also got to talk about the Senior Bowl and the NFL draft. Ray's going to be headed to the Senior Bowl. We'll get a look at a lot of the names that aren't necessarily top first round picks, but guys who are going to be big conversations in the early part of the draft. That's all going to happen at the Senior Bowl. We'll get Ray's early insight on that on the other side of this first break here at the North Shore Drive Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. But first, I want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar on the North Shore, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. Go down to Mike's Beer Bar. It's right on Federal Street across from PNC Park. It's the perfect place for you to go with your friends, hang out, enjoy some good sports, and enjoy some good beer. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, they have over 20 televisions. So whatever game you want to watch, you can get it on a specific television, whether it's college basketball, NBA, and NHL, whatever you want, the Super Bowl, Mike's Beer Bar is the place to be. And while you're there, you can sample one of 500 different available beers, 300 of those beers from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap, and they're always switching new things in and out of the taps so that you have new options every single week, whether you like sours, IPA, pale ales, Hefeweizens, whatever's your jam, they've got there. So head down to Mike's Beer Bar today. They also have amazing food like steak and seafood on a stone, where a heated stone is where your meat comes out. You cut it off, you press it into the stone, you choose how well done you want every single bite. It's the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. So go down to Mike's Beer Bar on the North Shore, and when you get there, tell them Chris sent you.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
We're back here in the North Shore Drive Podcast for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Ray Fittipaldo, talking all things Steelers. Let's take a look at the NFL draft. So we'll get to Mobile in a second here, Ray, but you wrote a breakdown of the deep prospects at several different positions of need that the Steelers could be looking at here that could benefit them. And the positions that you listed were quarterback, offensive tackle, receiver, cornerback, and interior offensive line being center or guard here. If the Steelers are to get anything in this draft class, what do you think is the most likely look in the first round with how you see things playing out? And this is very early in the process. We still haven't seen the Senior Bowl, the combine, and all the other things. But what's your first look as far as what they're probably going to be targeting with their first pick?
You know, Chris, it's so hard to say. I mean, let's frame it their top needs going into this aspect of the draft process. And, you know, some of these needs will be filled via free agency, and obviously some of these draft prospects won't be considered in the first round. But I think you could make a case for cornerback being a first round option for them. Levi Wallace is a free agent. I cannot see them picking up almost a $10 million cap hit on Patrick Peterson. So you're going to need another starting outside corner to go with Joey Porter. And then two other possibilities for me. Offensive tackle in the first round, double down 2 years in a row after getting Broderick Jones at 14 overall. I think you could certainly do that again. Or, you know, Chris, you can go with defensive line. The only issue with defensive line, it's not a deep draft for defensive linemen. So there's – I looked at a couple of mock drafts. I think Mel Kiper had one D lineman going. Daniel Jeremiah had two. So the likelihood of you landing that guy when you're picking at 20, I don't know what the odds are. So we'll have to see how that goes. But I think those are the top three needs for the Steelers as we get started here with the 2024 draft talk.
Yeah, I think it's going to be certainly interesting to see what they prioritize, because there's so many positions that the Steelers kind of need to address, you know, on either side of the ball. You know, cornerback, like you said, pairing someone with Joey Porter Jr. would be I think, very important for what they want to do on defense and having a person there. You know, interior offensive line, they need a center so badly. You know, I think a good center changes a lot for the offense, especially the run game. If they can get strength up the middle, they haven't had that with Mason Cole. I think, you know, he was a guy that when he was at his best, he was kind of part of the rising tide. Like, you know, he was the boat that rose with the tide rather than being the catalyst for their improvements, like Isaac Seumalo and Broderick Jones and James Daniels were at times. So they're there, but no one can deny the offensive tackle and quarterback are big things that the Steelers have to look at. You know, Dan Moore Jr., you know, you cannot, I think if you go in with him as your projected starter without a rookie that's coming to take his spot soon, you're putting yourself in a rough spot, and you need to pair Roderick Jones with somebody. I think that's another priority, but quarterback is the tricky position of this draft class, because you're right. There's depth there. There's big names. You know, you can look at guys like Penix, guys like Nix, guys like McCarthy, you know, Jaden Daniels. I don't think the Steelers are going to be in position to go get, you know, of course, guys like Caleb Williams or Drake May. Maybe right. Jaden Daniels falls a bit. We never know how things shake out on draft day. But where do you think that the move that they should make at quarterback is right now? Should they get extra aggressive and try to get their guy in the first round?
Anything is possible, Chris. You know, we don't know exactly what they're thinking there in terms of Kenny Pickett. You know, Mike said what he said the day after they lost to the Bills. But, you know, inside those meeting rooms on the south side, we don't know exactly how they're feeling. So do I think they would address it in the first round? No, I don't think they could. They could do that given so many other needs on this roster. But second round or after, you know, I could see that happening. I don't know if a guy like McCarthy or Penix or Nix would fall that far. I doubt it given the early returns on, you know, their draft stock. But I pointed out, you know, in 2020, that was Andy Weidel's first time running the Eagles draft. He went there in 2016 or 2017, but I think he was like assistant VP of personnel. He was actually VP of personnel, ran the draft in 2020. And Carson Wentz was coming off an okay year, 27 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. I think they were 9-7. Can't remember if they made the playoffs or not, but it was a decent season for Carson Wentz. And they went out and took Jalen Hurts with the number 53 overall pick. And obviously, look at what's transpired since then. I know Jalen Hurts didn't have a great year this year, but he took the Eagles to the Super Bowl last year and came within, you know, a break here, a break there of actually bringing another Super Bowl to the city of Philadelphia. So I will never, ever underestimate what this new front office is thinking. We have to get out of the notion that, well, the Steelers do things this way because we had Kevin Colbert for like 2 decades. I think we have to sort of have an open mind about that. But for me, Chris, I still can't see first round. But like I said, second round or after, sure, I'm not closing the door on that.
Yeah, I think that's something the Steelers will keep the door open. And I think it's the general rule of quarterback. You just have to get it right once, and then you're good for
10, 15 years. And that's what the Steelers are still trying to figure out. That's what the Steelers are hoping that they had in Kenny Pickett, and they haven't found that yet. And I think that they're not going to give up on Kenny Pickett just yet, but I do think this is like the last year that Kenny Pickett has to prove that before that they make a considerable investment to just fix that position as a whole. But I think it's also going to be an interesting weighing point, because here's the thing. You take a guy like you take a first round guy, like you take a top flight corner, you take a top flight offensive tackle, then you go to the second round. The second round is the sweet spot to find good centers in this draft. I don't think you're not drafting a center in the first round this year. There's just like the guys that we've seen, they're not of that caliber. There's no super dominant center that's obviously a first round pick this year. But if you go to the second round and you take that quarterback, you better have added a center in free agency. Otherwise, Mason Cole will be your starter next year. And I think that's the tricky position that they're in, is that, if they make that investment at quarterback, they'll be sacrificing another position on the field unless they fix that other position in free agency.
Yeah. And then, we could talk about this obviously as we get closer to March, but there are some okay options in free agency. I don't know if the Broncos are going to re-sign Lloyd Cushenberry. But, he would be one guy that, maybe you could bring in. But I think you're right. You got Powers Jackson, who's from mm-hmm. Oregon. He's mm-hmm. right now you probably see him as the number one center, but it's close. Zach Frazier is coming off that injury. I think he's in the top three. And then you have Cedric Van Praan from Georgia. Those are probably the top three guys. And you see those guys anywhere, I don't want to say early second round, but, sort of like in the 40s or 50s, you'll see maybe some of those guys starting to come off the board. You rarely see, Powers Jackson or Van Praan still, I think they'll be gone by the end of the second round. So you're right. If you don't, Frazier's a different story because he's injured. The medicals on him are going to be important. So you just look at the first two, you're right. If you're going to make that move, you probably have to get it at number 50. And then what if there's a run on centers and they're gone in the 40s? And then what do you do if you don't sign a free agent? So, they have to be prepared going into the offseason. If they think they can get by with Mason Cole for one more year, maybe drafting center will be a luxury, or maybe they just figure, hey, if we hit it right, if our guy's there, we'll take him. But, it's a difficult position. There aren't a lot of great centers in this draft. And like you said, the really good ones are probably going to be gone by the end of round two, if not maybe middle of round three with Frazier, given his leg injury.
That's going to be the tricky part of this, is figuring out where that's going to be. Real quick here, Ray, you're going down in the Senior Bowl. Do you have early names that you're at least keeping an eye on of guys who you know are Senior Bowl invites? Because there's always guys that get brought in at the last second to be added on. Right. But are there guys that you're looking at just that you're curious how they perform?
Yeah, Van Praan and Powers Jackson will be there, so I'll be watching the centers. A couple of good tackles are going to be there. Unfortunately, receivers, a lot of the very good receivers in this draft are underclassmen, but, looking at the offensive tackles, I don't have the list in front of me. Top 10 offensive tackles, I think three or four will be at the Senior Bowl. The kid from Oregon State, the Samoan kid will be there. The other Samoan kid from Washington, Fanatu, will be there. So, tackles and centers, they'll have my attention down there. And cornerbacks, too. There's a couple of good ones. The kid from Toledo, I think his name's Mitchell, Quinion Mitchell, will be there. And a couple of other guys who are like in that late first, early second round conversation for cornerbacks, too. So it's a good year to be going down to the Senior Bowl, given what the Steelers' needs are for this roster.
Absolutely. I want to talk more about that with Ray when he gets down there. So we'll have him back to talk Senior Bowl. But I want to talk about Ray with the playoffs, because there are some crazy things that happen outside of the Steelers in the NFL. We'll get to both sides of that, to what set up the Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the Niners, here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Chris Carter, Ray Fittipaldo, stick with us. We'll be right back.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Back here in the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Ray Fittipaldo. Ray, let's talk about what happened in the playoffs here. Let's start with the AFC. The Chiefs finding a way to pull it out again. And, I thought this might have been the year going into the playoffs. I thought this might have been the year like, all right, the Chiefs are finally not going to be the talk of the town and going to be running the AFC because they hadn't had a strong year. And then all of a sudden, Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs does his thing again. He gets hot against the Dolphins. He outperforms Josh Allen against the Bills. And then they pull it out. Now, granted, they won 17-10. So it wasn't just Patrick Mahomes. That Chiefs defense came to play for real. I thought they made good second half adjustments in this game. But in your eyes, Lamar Jackson, another playoff loss. How much of that game was on him? He threw a terrible interception late in the game. But he also threw a pass that should have been a touchdown if Zay Flowers just doesn't fumble at the one-yard line. Where do you see Lamar Jackson as a, you know, as a big time quarterback in the NFL?
I mean, even if Zay Flowers gets in there, Chris, 17 points. I mean, you got to be more explosive than that in the postseason if you're going to be a true Super Bowl contender. I'm not pinning this loss on Lamar Jackson, but I'm probably more apt to pin it on Zay Flowers. I mean, he just total knucklehead move to get a taunting call in that situation.
And then cut his hand after his fumble by slamming it. Like that dude was losing it.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, finally when they get a good receiver, it turns out like he's a hothead, so they, the Ravens can't win. They can't scout receivers. They finally, they finally find one. And then it turns out that he's a head case. So, I've seen that before from Lamar. I think anyone who watches those Steelers-Ravens games since Lamar's come into the league, they can make him look that way. He looks great against other teams. So I don't know if the Chiefs took a page out of the Steelers playbook. Spagnuolo doesn't need to. I mean, he's got a great defense in his own right. But I just felt like I saw that movie before when I was watching kind of the meltdown that, Lamar and Zay Flowers had in the second half of that football game.
Surely. I agree with you there. Like, It's just so funny to me because Dan Orlovsky during the game tweets out only the Chiefs have done this to Lamar Jackson and beating him 17-10. And it's like, well, wait a second. Didn't the Steelers just do that earlier this year? They've also beaten the Ravens 7 of the last 8 times and in all of those wins except for, I think, one time in November of 2020. And that was a game Lamar Jackson didn't play. But in all those wins, they held the Ravens to under 20 points. So it is kind of a thing. But Steve Spagnuolo, he might be the best defensive coordinator in the NFL right now with the way that the Chiefs are playing. They are humming at a high level, and they have big guys. Chris Jones is a big factor. Carl Loftus has been playing very well. Jarius Sneed has been playing very well. Willie Gay, but they've been having guys play all over the place. They're doing really well. They're going to be a tough team to beat in the Super Bowl, and that's crazy to think because, if you had said that a month ago, someone would have been like, you're crazy in that situation. But let's talk about the NFC side of things, and less about the Niners winning the game, more about the Lions losing it after a 17-point second-half lead. Ray, all the talk in sports right now is, did Dan Campbell blow it by not kicking the field goals? Or no, that's how aggressive he should have been because of analytics, and you always go for it, and that's what you should do. Where do you stand on this debate as far as you take the points in the playoffs?
Dan Campbell blew it, 100%. No one, you could be whatever analytics guy, whatever. I mean, there's plenty of people who are of your generation, Chris. I don't know where you stand on it, but that 35 and under crowd, a lot of those people think they invented football. they didn't invent football. And this just goes to show you the Detroit Lions could have been up 17 points with 22 minutes to play. And I know what the percentages said. Somebody from ESPN tweeted out it was pretty much a wash, you know, 90% victory rate if you kick there, 90% victory rate if you go for it there. So I understand that. But what the analytics crowd doesn't take into effect or into account is the momentum and just, you know, how teams respond to those situations. So I thought that when Reynolds dropped that pass, I thought it gave them life. And then just things began to snowball against the Lions, and they couldn't stop the snowball from going downhill. So I understand Dan Campbell played that way the entire season. That's a lot of people's rationale. Oh, you play one way, you can't change. Well, no, you got a chance to go to the Super Bowl. It's not being conservative. Go up 17 points and give yourself a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And like I said, Dan Campbell blew that. And much in the same way Dan Quinn blew the Super Bowl against the Patriots, I don't know that he's ever going to get over it.
I know. I agree. Sorry, I thought you were continuing there. My bad. But no. I agree. So here's the thing. I am of the opinion, like, I'm under 35 and I'm part of that new, but I'm not of the rely on the analytics crowd. I think that there's times where analytics can be used to determine things that we didn't understand before, to take things into consideration, but they should not erase classic things that, you know, play in the game, like especially against that team that they're playing on the road in their house. The Niners are a really good team. You have to keep your foot on their throats. And in that situation, if you kick the field goal and you miss it, I don't think that that's as much of a momentum boost as missing that on fourth down. And I think that if you hit that field goal, like you said, you go up 17 points, then the Niners, even if they get a touchdown on that next drive, guess what? They're still down two scores there, and you have time to kind of, you know, base things off. And again, even if they hit just one of those two field goals they didn't take, it's a tie game at the end of the game, and they can kick it deep and go to overtime. So I think those were mistakes on his part. I also thought the choosing to run on third down when they were at the goal line, which put them in a spot where they had to get the onside kick to have a chance to win, I felt like that was a tough call there. But I also feel like this, Ray, because the counter argument to people say was, well, listen, yeah, That's how the Lions have been all year. They've been a team that goes for it on fourth down. They play that aggressive style of ball. And there were so many plays the Lions players didn't make, like Josh Reynolds dropping the first down on one of the fourth down passes, Jameson Williams dropping a touchdown, the bounce pass that went right off of a Lions defensive back's face mask into the hands of Brandon Ayuk for that set him up for a touchdown. There were so many plays that I agree the Lions play for. I don't think that Dan Campbell by himself lost the Lions the game, but I do think he made big mistakes that led to that loss. And that's where I don't think it should be valued above everything. Like, I think there's too many times we just say, a coach, it's all on this guy. It's all on this guy. When it's like, man, you know what? If Jahmyr Gibbs doesn't fumble right after that first touchdown, the Lions might win that game. There's so many things that had to happen. But I agree with you in that knowing the situation as a head coach against a team that's as good as the Niners, that is a part of what a head coach needs to do. And listen, Campbell, this is what, his second, third year as a head coach for the Lions. Third, he's still building in what he'll do. I think that this can be a learning experience, and it'll be interesting to see if he ever gets to this point again in the playoffs and takes the different decision.
Listen, any coach, I don't care what level you're at, there's a gut feel to coaching in certain situations, Chris, and you just can't read a sheet that some front office guy from the Ivy League hands you and say, okay, this is what I have to do. I mean, that's just,
I agree.
That doesn't work in high level professional sports. I'll give you one example.
Sure.
This is probably before you were born, but the Pirates in 1979, the World Series championship team.
Definitely before I was born.
John Milner came to the plate, lefty on lefty, and Chuck Tanner just had a hunch. It was a big game, September, pennant race, you know, the Pirates needed it to, you know, to win the pennant. And he pinch hit Milner in a lefty-on-lefty situation. I think he hit it off Tug McGraw, and he hit a grand slam that helped the Pirates get into the playoffs. So it's not always going by the percentages. Sometimes you just have to have a gut feel. You have to kind of just coach with your instincts. And I think a lot of times, you know, guys like Dan Campbell and many others now who are put in these positions – simply are taught to read off a sheet and, oh, it says I have to do this, I'm going to do this. And that's not the right way to coach a football team. And, you know, it cost the Detroit Lions a berth in the Super Bowl. And like I said, I don't think they're going to get over this easily. They got a good thing going on, but they're going to lose their OC. I don't know what their cap situation is, free agent situation, but I would be surprised if they get back under Dan Campbell. That's just a devastating loss given the circumstances in the lead that they had.
I know, I agree with you. It's devastating. And those type of things are not easy to get over. You know, there's plenty of teams that have been in situations where they're like, hey, we finally got to the place that we had a chance to, you know, make our claim, and then don't get back to there. And it was what I think is good for Dan Campbell, though, is that he told his team that. He's like, hey, we might not ever be in this situation again, not just because of being in the NFC Championship, but now everybody's going to be looking for the Lions next year. Like, this year, they were the Cinderella. Like, even when they were 12-5 and were a team that legitimately had a shot at the 2 seed and all that, people looked at them as like, oh, it's just the Lions. But then they went in and they got to the NFC Championship game. But now next year, everyone's going to be like, oh, no, that's Dan Campbell's Lions. We got to be ready for them. And they do have decent amount of cap space. I think 58.6 is the number that they have right now from overthecap.com. But when I look at that, like, it's no guarantee that they're going to figure all of that out and just get right back to there. Other NFC teams are going to be getting better. What happens with the Eagles? Are they back in position? You know, the Packers with Jordan Love, you know, do they keep making progress? There's a lot of questions there. So it's tough when you get your shot and you don't get it, especially when you let it slip through your fingers. Look what happened to the Falcons after their 28-3 debacle in the Super Bowl. They did not recover well from that. We'll see how all that happens, and we'll also get an updated look on the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama from Ray. Thanks again for everyone for tuning into the North Shore Drive Podcast. Thank you, Ray, for joining us. We'll be back here on Wednesday here on the North Shore Drive Podcast. Reminder, the show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar. Thanks, Mike Beer Bar, for sponsoring us. Tune in all week long. We have our Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive Podcast, as well as our daily content from all of our different Post-Gazette sports writers on all the different topics. We'll see you again here on Wednesday on the North Shore Drive Podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive Podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.